I'm very sure you have an important life, but whatever you are doing, stop and pay attention. It's The Afternoon, a podcast with Brent and Robbie.
Show me that smile again. Don't waste another minute on your crying. As long as we got each other, we've got the world spinning right in our hands. We got each other, sharing the laughter and love.
Welcome to the Afternooner Sports Podcast. I'm Robbie. With me, as always, is Brent. Joining me to my right is Sunday School Billy in a Spartan Race t-shirt. And before we get started this week, we want to ask you, our listeners, to give us, the Afternooner, a Christmas present. If you listen to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or Google Play, you have the option of subscribing to our podcast. If you've not already done so, and I'm sure most of you have, we kindly ask that as a Christmas gift to the three of us that you'd subscribe. Just stop the podcast, just hit pause, and go ahead and do it now. We'll wait. All right, thanks. Thanks for wishing us a Merry Christmas. Now, Brent, I know you got something you want to get to right off the bat this week.
Sometimes you just get a reminder that this mortal coil is not forever. And in the past week, Robbie, your and I's childhood took a real beating when we lost one of the great patriarchs of 1980s sitcom history, Alan Thicke.
Oh, I did see that.
Father figure of Kirk Cameron in the television show Growing Pains, played Jason Seaver. If you're like me, your first interaction with a psychiatrist. He was a psychiatrist on the show, and if you remember, his office was in their house. Much like, I mean, the show...
And so you just kind of thought he didn't have a real job.
Yeah, well, the show was clearly a ripoff of The Cosby Show, right? All of those family shows are sort of a ripoff of The Cosby Show. But this took it one further.
Did The Cosby Show come first?
Definitely.
What year, Billy, could you look this up? What year did Growing Pains start? Because I feel like Cosby started in 84 or 85.
I would guess Cosby started around 83 or 84, and I would bet Growing Pains started anywhere between 84 and 86.
I'm on it.
Because this, to you, Billy, you're only 17 years old, so to you, the loss of Alan Thicke is just, you know, the loss of an abstract concept.
It's just a number.
Where for us, it's the loss of a concept, but much more meaningful, it's the loss of fatherhood.
I have seen The Cosby Show. That was one that I would watch growing up, but not...
not Growing Pains.
Growing Pains.
Yeah, it's where Leonardo DiCaprio got his start.
And Candace Cameron Bure, right? Wasn't Candace?
No, was on Full House.
She's in Full House. But she was Kirk Cameron's real-life sister.
Yeah, so right? You could say that she got her start because nepotism probably helped out. Hey, this Kirk Cameron guy is successful on a television show. Let's cast his sister on a later show.
The Cosby Show aired for almost 4 years before I was born.
That wasn't the question we asked.
Oh, 1984.
84.
So and September 20th. Which, yeah. As all our faithful After Gooners know, my birthday is September 19th, 1988.
Interesting. Now, when did Growing Pains start?
I haven't found that yet.
Robbie, give us a favorite moment in Growing Pains history for you.
Well, one of them was when they went on a vacation somewhere away from whatever town or the set that they usually recorded the show on. And the mom, whose name escapes me.
Joanna Kearns.
The mom, as I'll still
Maggie,
call her.
Maggie Seaver.
That's what I needed. Maggie Seaver.
And then if you remember, she was a housewife, but then when the kids got older, she became a TV news reporter, and there was an episode about how she went by Maggie Malone.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like us, she's a member of the media.
Like...
And so there's the one episode where she was had her job again, and they went on vacation, but she had so much work to do that she was sneaking off in the middle of the night into the bathroom with her... huge, either not a typewriter, what do they call them? A word processor. because she had so much work to do and she really didn't want her to go on the vacation.
That's the moment that you think of with growing pains, when the mom had too much work on vacation?
Well, I mean, there's that one. There's also just every episode where you realize there's a character, the neighbor boy next door, whose nickname was Boner.
Yeah, and he's the guy who played him is dead now by his own hand. He committed suicide several years ago. I assume mental illness, but yeah, he's actually dead.
I'm going to take this a happier route because Brent just made a little sad. So Growing Pains did start about exactly 1 year after The Cosby Show.
Only
September
1 year.
24th, okay. 1985.
So thanks for looking that up, Billy. I mean, your theory might be true, Brent.
I just think, you know, they've had the psychiatrist in the house, much like they had the obstetrician in the house. But I want to get back to what Jason Seaver would psychoanalyze about the fact that your one Growing Pains memory is about the mom having too much work on vacation. I'll give you two memories, Robbie. One is, speaking of Maggie Seaver, there was like a school board meeting with Jason and Maggie, and it turns out Jason and Maggie disagreed. And so they were in this meeting, and someone says, yeah, but your wife says something else. And Jason Seaver says, Alan Thicke says, well, my wife is ignorant about this. And he was trying to say, like, she's just uninformed. Like, and then it became this whole thing. And even as a little kid, I thought, oh, you know, husband, you stepped in it there. Like, even as like a, you know, 8-year-old kid. But the other one is, for some reason, I remember the very special episode where Carol, the sort of Poindexter younger sister to Kirk Cameron, her boyfriend is in a car wreck. And she and her parents go to visit him. And when they come back into the house, Kirk Cameron steps out of the kitchen, looks at him. He's like, I'm really sorry. They just called. He died of internal bleeding. I didn't know what internal bleeding was. And then she's screaming, saying, like, that's not true. That's not true. And she hits Mike, which is Kirk Cameron. And he's like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Like, that's this really sad moment I remember on this sitcom. Because Carol had found true love with this guy. Of course, he didn't exist 2 episodes earlier, but I had a feeling about those kids. They were going to make it.
I like it that each of us both had these really kind of sad, depressing memories of Growing Pain highlights. You know, you say the Growing Pains is really just a ripoff of the Cosby Show trying to capitalize on their success.
I mean that only in the most flattering terms possible.
I think it was really just a vehicle to get Kirk Cameron out into pop culture, into celebrity status, and to launch pad him into the star that he has become as the featured actor in the Left Behind series films.
Yeah, I mean, he is like if someone thinks of like bad evangelical actor, isn't he the first one that you'd think of?
I'll see what Google has to say.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think so. But he wasn't, you never felt like he was bad in Growing Pains.
No, and bad, I guess, is relative, of course, but you know, we're on a college campus. I think there are people on this campus who could out-act Kirk Cameron. In fact, I think maybe one of those people is sitting right across from me.
Do you guys know who Marjo Gortner is?
No, but there's no way that's the way you're supposed to pronounce that.
M-A-R-J-O-E.
Margo? Really?
Marjorie?
Marjorie? It's Margo?
It says it's a he. M-A-R-J-O-E.
I don't even know what you're looking up right now.
And then Gortner, G-O-R-T-N-E-R.
What is this?
I Googled bad evangelical actor, and he's the first person to show up.
What if you Google best evangelical actor?
Hugh.
Or best bad?
It's Hugh Marjo Ross Gortner. So let's have our callers call in and tell us more about him, since we're not going to talk about him.
And if you want to call in and tell us more about that person's name and I cannot pronounce it, it's 517-798-6187.
So to Alan Thicke, who passed away last week at the age of 69, we salute you. We don't have 21 guns, but we could sing you into that sweet, sweet sleep.
Show me that smile again. Don't waste another minute on your crying. We're nowhere near the end. The best is ready to begin. Oh, as long as we got each other, We've got the world spinning right in our hands, baby, you and me. We gotta be the luckiest dreamers who never quit dreaming as long as we keep on giving. We can take anything that comes our way, baby, rain or shine, all the time. We got each other sharing the laughter and love.
That's to you, Alan Thicke. R.I.P.
That's nice. Billy, you didn't join in.
It's not for me, too. This was your guys' send-off, and that was beautiful. That really was great.
Florence Henderson died not too long ago. Is that a show that you know? Florence Henderson, the mom of the Brady Bunch? Do you know that show?
I did see that she passed away, and Brady Bunch was one that we watched occasionally. There's a story
of a lovely lady who was bringing up three very lovely girls. All of them had hair of gold, like their mother, the youngest one in curls. Here's a story of a man named Brady, who was busy with three boys of his own. They were four men living all together, yet they were all alone. Till the one day when the lady met this fellow, and they knew that it was much more than a hunch, that this crew must somehow form a family. That's the way they all became the Brady Bunch. The Brady Bunch. The Brady Bunch. That's the way we became the Brady Bunch.
That was nice. So, Billy, you are familiar with the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, we watched that growing up, but never watched Growing Pains. Watched some Cosby Show. But those were a little, I was more of a Home Improvement kind of kid. And again, this is sort of out of my control because I recognize that Home Improvement.
That you're just a decade younger than we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so can you promise us that whoever you're spending Christmas Day with, I don't know, everyone down at the vet's office or wherever you're going to be on Christmas, that you're just going to watch a Growing Pains marathon?
No, I will not promise you that.
Well, but how about one episode? Just get, hey, everybody, let's just watch one episode.
That's an excellent idea. How about, one episode.
How about pre-Super Bowl, we watch an episode chosen by Robbie and Brent before Robbie does his blindfolded Super Bowl
What if we do this? What if, which, by the way, we need to do an update on the LI on. What if we sent something out to all the Aftergooners to watch a certain Growing Pains episode that was available on YouTube, and then we would spend an entire podcast breaking it down.
Just doing a close reading.
Just a close reading of a single episode of Growing Pains. That might be a promise for a New Year's resolution. It's our last podcast of 2016.
This is our last podcast of 2016. That's
that
right.
That might be a resolution to do at some point in 2017. Let's just put a pin in that and...
So this is one of those things that we say we're going to do that we never do.
Yeah, it probably won't ever happen, but here's the thing.
If we actually remember it in January, we're probably going to do it.
If we do it, I'm going to take it really seriously. Like, I'm going to spend hours and hours breaking down set symbolism.
Are we going to do the Super Bowl thing?
Well,
are you just trolling me right now, Billy? You know how the Lions fared this last weekend against the Giants.
Now, to be fair, we decided last week that the Lions were a team of destiny. It's Super Bowl 51. That's L.I. So the L.I. on. Trademark on that noise for the Afternooner. That's a great noise.
And the noise. Bloop, 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 bloop.
Yeah, what else did we trademark last week? There was some great idea that we had that we just said Afternooner trademark.
Yeah, because I remember making the joke that just if you call it, it's trademarked.
I think
right?
it was
if
about
you call dibs. You call first.
I think it was the movie idea we had where a boy leaves one of his toys behind, and they actually come to life when people aren't looking at them. And then the toys, a couple of them who are sort of at odds with one another get separated from their owner, who they love, and they have to try and get back to him through a series of misadventures.
Can I throw a couple of toy ideas out there for you?
Yeah.
First one, old timey sheriff.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Second one, Ouija board. So the sheriff and the Ouija board go on different... And the way that they know where to go is because the Ouija board keeps telling them through some sort of...
Yeah.
I don't know, portal to another world. I don't know. I'm just spitballing right now.
You know, I think we could get Kirk Cameron on this. But let's put a pin in it.
Let's put a pin in it. So, yeah, Robbie, just for those after gooners that don't actually follow sports, which is the vast majority, the Lions, essentially, with four games left in the NFL season...
control their own destiny.
And yet the Packers are on the move... and the Lions, too, are on the move. The Lions lost today while the Packers won.
So now the Packers are one game behind the Lions in the NFC North Division. The Lions coming into this week were the second seed, and they were playing the New York Giants. Both teams have a good defense.
Mm-hmm.
The final score, the Lions 6, the Giants 17. But that was a late touchdown that was really just tacked on at the end. The game was really an ugly game. It was pretty much 6-10.
Wait,
the majority of the second half.
I find that hard to believe. The Lions rarely play ugly games.
And what I just found myself getting more and more disgusted with the Lions as this game went along. I knew they weren't going to win. I don't know why I even bothered to watch. During the second half, I started doing a puzzle so I at least could feel like I was doing something worthwhile and I wasn't completely invested in the game when they inevitably did lose. And they did. It wasn't just inevitable. They actually did. See, I'm not even making sense right now. I'm getting so flustered. But they keep drafting tight ends in the first round. GM of the Lions or any NFL team, call me. If you're thinking of drafting a GM, a tight end in the first round, you never, ever, ever do it. The best two tight ends of the last two generations, Rob Gronkowski and Antonio Gates, they weren't drafted in the first round. I don't even think they're drafted in the second round. Gates didn't even play college football. They drafted him like the sixth round. Gronkowski was maybe second round, but third round. You don't waste draft picks on tight ends. And they don't have a running game. They cannot run the ball at all. I think Matthew Stafford was the leading rusher. Matthew Stafford was the leading rusher. The guy has broken tendons in his hand. He shouldn't be running the ball. He's going to get his other hand hurt.
Man, just wind this guy up and watch him go.
They did this to Barry Sanders. And they wasted his prime. Calvin Johnson just finally retired because they were wasting his career and all the concussions and the drugs he was willing to take to try to win. And they're wasting Matthew Stafford's prime too. Now, Matthew Stafford, they mention him as an MVP candidate, but that's ridiculous. He's not an MVP candidate, but he's at least an above-average quarterback. He is at least an above-average quarterback, and they're just wasting him. They're not going to make the playoffs.
I'm sorry. I was not listening. Robbie, what did you think about the game today?
The Lions-Giants game.
I did finish the puzzle. I finished the puzzle. That's the important thing.
What was it a puzzle of?
What was it a puzzle of? Was it of a Lions catch?
It was a 1,000-piece sports legends puzzle. So at least Barry Sanders was actually on the puzzle. I started with the boys like a week ago, and I'm just like, we got to get this done so we can get off the table.
Were the boys doing the puzzle with you?
At this point, no. I just wanted to finish it.
So you're just an angry dad doing a puzzle by himself.
I was angry sports fan doing a puzzle by myself. It was very therapeutic. You could imagine what kind of state I would be in at the podcast right now had I not done the puzzle.
I am so sad. First of all, remember when we were talking last week about how if they just got to the Super Bowl, you'd be calm and cool and collected.
They're not going to even make the playoffs, Brent.
So, man, it's so sweet not to be a fan of anyone. So, just to be clear, are you glad that you're a Lions fan?
I mean, I'm a Lions fan. I was born a Lions fan. I'm a Lions fan.
Born.
I don't know if glad. I was born this way, okay? I was born this way.
It's your lot in life, huh?
Billy, you're a Lions fan. You understand my pain. You thankfully had a wedding you had to go to, and so you didn't suffer like I did today, but you know what I'm going through right now.
Yeah, but Robbie, like, I checked out of this season like the third game in because I saw...
So did I!
I saw this coming from the third game in.
But then they sucked me back in with their weak schedule and their lucky breaks.
Nah, it's like, they just, every year, since I have been a Lions fan, they find new and creative ways to get the hopes of their, like, fans up. And they did that again, but I didn't get hooked. Because of how the Lions do this every year, I think they've helped me disconnect from that sort of homerism. So I will still cheer for the Lions over other teams, but I am certainly not as emotionally distraught as you are right now.
I'm usually not, but I started looking at the standings a couple weeks ago. I'm like, oh, this. I started making that Sunday school Billy noise. And I'm like, hey, maybe they might make the playoffs. This is not a playoff team that might make playoffs. Wait, they might get a bye in the playoffs. If they get a bye, all they have to do is win two games. Anything could happen. They could be in the Super Bowl.
This has been your LI on update. Just a couple of happy Lions fans. Hey, did you see any, you know, generally we don't talk about sports on this podcast, but my son Leo and I, we watched football this afternoon, and you know, my parents live in Nashville, so we sort of have a passing interest in seeing the Titans do well. And they had this amazing game with the Chiefs today.
Oh yeah, I saw the end too.
And so we should talk about the ending, but then I wanted to talk about a call that the coach made beforehand, or we'll do that after the field goal. But the game was ending, and the Titans were down 1 point, and they went to kick a very long field goal on a very cold day.
53 yards, 1 yard shy of the kicker's previous long in his career of 54.
But this was, I think, the coldest game in Titans franchise history.
And he was kicking into the wind.
And he was kicking against his former team.
Oh, now he goes to kick it, and it's straight. My son and I are watching. We're like, straight, I think it's going in. No, it doesn't even get to the crossbar. But the Kansas City Chief head coach, Andy Reid, had called a timeout to try and, quote-unquote, freeze the kicker, despite the fact that statistics show this does not work in any way. And, folks, you know how it ended. He got another chance, and it was directly down the middle, long enough, the whole team's jumping up and down.
He nailed it.
It doesn't work. These guys are pros. In fact, the worst thing you can do, apparently, is let them get a practice kick by calling the timeout that late, because now they've actually just had a practice kick, which is what Reed did, and then he went there and just did the same thing again, except further.
I love it that you said these guys are pros, and you meant the kickers, but these guys are pros, meaning the coaches too. And the research is very convincing this is not an effective strategy, but yet coaches persist and consist to do it anyway over and over again. And I love it when it backfires on the coach. Well, that they outsmarted themselves. If he doesn't call the timeout, that first one's short.
It's because I'm sure someone did this 10 years ago and it worked. And then that's just now, like, for some reason, conventional wisdom.
I mean, but it worked means that that actually had an effect on the kicker. You're assuming that he wouldn't have missed anyway had you not called the timeout.
Right. Causation or anything like that.
It appeared to work.
Yes, it appeared to work. And then this is just like, well, I can somehow control the game. These coaches are always meddling, pretend they're the ones that make a difference.
Couldn't a coach argue that at this point, kickers are expecting to be iced when there's timeouts on the clock? So a coach would be like, I'm not calling it, because that's going to play a mind game now, because the new norm is to be iced.
I mean, I think what fantastic. The coach should do is they should do this really dramatic. They walk about 5 yards onto the field. They're kind of slowly putting their hands together like they're going to make a T with their hands to call a timeout. And then the kicker's looking over like, oh, yeah, that's what I want you to do. And then the last second, when the hands are inches away from touching, the coach just pulls his hands away and walks back to the sideline. And the kicker's like, oh, no, I got to kick it. I was expecting a timeout.
Love it. Love it.
It's called the pump fake timeout.
The coach should be yelling something as he's walking over on the side of the field, though. Maybe, hey, ref.
Is he late for his drama audition? Why is he yelling like?
If there were a coach, head coach in the NFL who would sound like that, who would it be?
Maybe
Gus Bradley, because he just got fired at the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I was thinking Dirk Koetter, the head coach of Tampa.
Wait, what's his name?
Dirk Koetter. Am I pronouncing it incorrectly?
I have no idea.
It's K O E T T E R. Is it Cutter?
I've heard it both ways.
So let's talk about another part of that Chiefs-Titans game, Robbie, because earlier the Titans, who were not supposed to win this game, were down 17-10, and there was only 3 minutes left in the game, and they scored a touchdown, going to 17-16.
Now, with 3 minutes left in the game.
With 3 minutes left to go. And Mike Mularkey is the head coach of the Tennessee Titans, not in any way known for being a liberal coach. And yet they went for a 2-point conversion. And they did a play call that I hate, when they do it so often in two-point conversions, which is the rollout pass, which I hate because it essentially cuts the field in half. I don't understand why you're doing that. But I didn't like... Now, I'm a guy... I'd love to see coaches going for the two-point conversion.
Because the odds are usually are in their favor.
Yeah, theoretically. All things being equal, like you have to know about the running game and stuff like that. But yeah, all things being equal, it's like a 53% chance of scoring. And since that's double, then it just barely sides your way. But despite the fact that I love that Mularkey went for it, I actually didn't think it was a strategic decision. So let me run this by you. It's 17-16. If they get that two-point conversion, they go 18-17. And the Chiefs are now charging to get that field goal in 3 minutes. However, if it's only 17-17, the Chiefs are still charging down the field with the same amount of energy. It doesn't affect your opponent's strategy. So in that case, why not just tie the game? Because if the other team is going to be behaving the exact same way, why take the risk?
Well, I think it's because that means that he's going to take his chances in overtime on right. the road in Arrowhead Stadium. Arrowhead Stadium, where Kansas City Chiefs play, is a notorious difficult place to win on the road. And the Chiefs are one of the top two teams in the AFC this year.
Okay, a couple things. Chiefs are 2-5 this year in Arrowhead. And number two, they hadn't scored in the second half at all against the Titans.
So you're saying the Titans had the momentum?
Not just momentum, I'm saying that you had a good chance of getting the ball back anyway, which, by the way, they did. I mean, look, it worked out for the Titans, and maybe it doesn't work out that way with the play calls because now the Chiefs are ahead, so they're playing really conservatively. But it just seems like if your risk isn't, if the reward isn't going to affect your opponent's behavior at all, they're still going to want to come down and get that field goal. Then either no matter what you do, you have to stop them from getting to like the 35-yard line. If you have to do that no matter what, just play for the overtime. I mean, look, I feel dirty saying that, but in this situation, I mean, again, it worked out for them, but in this situation, it just seemed unnecessary because the Chiefs want that field goal no matter what, whether the game's tied or whether they're down 1 point.
So, Brent, you're telling me you're someone that likes to play for the tie, likes to, quote unquote, kiss his sister.
I don't know what you meant by that. I don't have a sister, but if I did, yes, I would want to kiss her, is what I'm saying.
isn't that what the old saying that coaches would say, a tie is like kissing your sister?
I don't know.
You've never heard this before?
No, I also don't have a sister, so I don't know what that really means.
I have two sisters, and I've never kissed them, so I don't know either. But you've never really heard this?
No.
Seriously. Like when college football, before they had overtime at all, and they had games that would end in ties, coaches, Billy, please Google this. Kissing your sister in college football.
I'm not Googling that. I'm not typing that into my browser.
I'm not saying you're making it up. Kissing your sister is just on your mind.
I'm just surprised that neither of you have heard of that expression before in conjunction with a tie in football.
No, I haven't.
Actually, so I Googled college football kissing your sister, and the first thing that comes up is tie or draw, Wikipedia entry.
Huh. Look, I didn't... I think my take on it is more Jason Seaver-ish, which is know your battles. Pick your battles. Know which hill you need to die on. And Mike, there's going to be another girl that comes along. Might be your sister. Might be someone you're not related to. But you're a winner, man. And Mike, Kirk, I love you. And your mom loves you, even though she's going by Maggie Malone because she's some big-time news anchor. And yes, I called her ignorant at that school board meeting, but I hope Maggie doesn't forget all the times we had together. That's just sort of my personal philosophy in a nutshell.
Just because Maggie had her own podcast didn't make her some big time newscaster.
Let's see if we can get Joanna Kearns on this podcast, the mom from Growing Pains. Billy, will you look up to see if she's, you know, got... You know, on Twitter or something like that. Joanna Kearns, K-E-R-N-S.
Can I give an update?
Yeah, please.
You know, last week we spent a great deal of time talking about the proposed legislation in the state of Washington that would allow people to carry weapons into public stadiums.
Well, this is the first I've heard of it. Billy?
I vaguely remember something
Was that this podcast that you talked about that?
I remember wanting to bring a harvesting scythe into a stadium.
So the representative, the state representative in Washington, Rep. Matt Shea.
D.C.?
Washington State. He's the one that authored this legislation. You know, we tweeted at him during the show last week, said, hey, call into the podcast. We'd love to talk to you about your bill you're sponsoring. Well, he never responded to that tweet. So I emailed Matt Shea this last week.
Much more official.
I don't know if I told you guys this. I sent him an email directly to his email address on his website and said, hey, we'd love for you to come on our show. We talked about you last week. Hey, we even tweeted at you. 10 minutes, you know. And I got to let me remind you, this is a state representative in Washington, not a state senator, which is the next level up, not a United States congressman, the next level, not a United States senator. What? This is a state representative.
Is it a president, though?
This is like just above a county commissioner, okay?
So what, not a president.
What is a county commissioner just above?
Just above the county clerk, who's on our naughty list for Christmas this year here in Jackson County,
by the
way.
We don't want them to subscribe.
Well, guess who else is on our naughty list now? It's you, Matt Shea. It's you, Representative Matt Shea in the state of Washington. Not only did he have the wherewithal to email me back directly from his own email account where I sent the email, his PR person...
He has a PR person?
Brendan Wold. Hi, Robbie. Rep. Shea did an interview with local national public radio reporter. Once that interview is posted, I can send you the link. Other than that, Rep. Shea is unavailable at this time to do further interviews. My apologies. Thank you for the request.
Did you just say local national?
Yeah, local. I mean, I think he probably means local public radio. I'm going to cut him a little bit of a slack, little slack. But I'm not cutting you any slack, Matt Shea. You're on the naughty list right there for this Christmas in the afternooner naughty list, the afternooner doghouse with the county clerk who doesn't keep track of write-in votes. You know, we actually had a listener call in this past week and say his mom works at some precinct counting votes and that they're not supposed to write. I don't care if they're not supposed to write them down. Next election, we expect you to write our names down if we're written in for any, whether it's state representative or county commissioner. We want to know, was the afternooner up for election? Do people cast ballots with our names on them?
How do we get that changed? Can the afternooner be involved in a lot of man hours to try and get it changed so that our precincts in Jackson County have to count every write-in vote? Individually recorded. Because apparently we can't write that in, because if we wrote that in, they wouldn't actually see it.
Would this actually get you to go before like some county election board?
In a heartbeat.
As long as we can record it for the show, right?
I promise. Listen, this is an afternooner promise, which is, I don't know what that means.
That's kind of new.
Yeah.
No, that's empty. Yeah. That's an empty promise.
But I will write a monologue that has Shakespearean quotes in it, that has outlandishly high concept metaphors in what is a speech that will demand them to ask me to step down from the podium, that if we could talk to the county commissioner. Like, I don't know if there's like a public hearing or a town hall meeting or whatever the case might be. I will have a document that preferably, Robbie, I mean, look, I'm sort of the writer here, you're sort of the actor, so if I could provide you with the speech, I'd stand right next to you. I am your Lady Macbeth to your Banquo.
Will Sunday School Billy be there with his shirt off? Because we're going to need those abs.
If you knew Macbeth, you would think that was funny.
I don't. Obviously, I don't. I'm sorry. Did you get it, Billy?
Yeah, I got it.
But Billy got it. He didn't laugh. So maybe yeah, it wasn't funny.
Yeah, Billy didn't.
Or he really
lying.
Doesn't get it.
I'm not lying.
Now he's looking up. Now he's looking up Banquo.
The best is how casually he dismissed that your accusation of him lying. He's like, I'm not lying.
# afternooner promise. Would you be willing to read the speech?
As long as it won't get me fired, yes.
Yeah, of course I'm not going to do something. Come on. one treasonous statement. I'm allowed one treasonous statement.
Yeah, I mean, no one goes to those public meetings anyway.
It's a deal. Billy, you are witnessing this handshake?
It's a left-handed handshake on my end, so...
Is that acceptable?
Yeah, it's right. Half a commitment.
It's as strong a commitment as is ever made on the afternoon.
So I'm going to come up... Well, Billy, will it be your responsibility to come up with where we're supposed to, like,
he's
get this
He's giving you a
thing.
Look like he's not doing that.
Well, no, I write it.
Yeah.
Robbie reads it. passionately. Mm. And Billy, you get all the logistical info about where is it supposed to go.
What are you writing again?
An impassioned speech about getting the policy changed where they have to count all the individual write-up votes.
Not
in
even
our county.
Count it, just record them. So there's a list, like a big long list, much like there's a big long list for Amherst College new mascot suggestions.
Yes, let's get to yes.
Well, my initial thought before we venture down that trail is that I'll wait until there's some sort of event going on downtown Jackson and then you can read it on a small crate on the steps of the public library.
Do we have like a speaker's corner or something like that, like in London, where you can just every Saturday morning, you just go to some corner and just make your public speeches to whoever happens to be there?
Not that I know of.
Well, let's start that.
I'll look into it as much as you guys are going to follow through on your parts.
So if I bring the speech, then you will...
I'll find a proper public audience for Robbie to read it.
I honestly think it starts with the county clerk's office and with election reform.
Nothing starts.
A lot of people have been pushing
office.
For election reform, and I'm sure this is exactly what they mean.
You said an aftergooner called in to say his mom was one of these people. Surely she knows where the public venue is to have this.
Now, she might be a volunteer in a precinct that's outside of our county. You know, the aftergooner, our audience's reach is far and wide. I mean, it's not limited to just mid-Michigan.
We're local national, as Representative Shea's PR person
that's
would say.
Right, as Brendan Wold said, we're local national. So I might have jumped the gun a little bit there, but I said we need a list of every name that's written in our county, just like Amherst College has a list of all the mascot name suggestions for their college that they've received in the last few months. Now, I think we talked about this on the podcast before. I don't think they've officially ever had a mascot, but the name of their town and their college comes from Lord Jeffrey Amherst.
Right. So let's get some history here. So we're talking in the state of Massachusetts. Lord Jeffrey Amherst was a general, I believe, but at least some sort of officer in the French and Indian War, or for all our European listeners, the Seven Years' War. I don't want there to be any confusion in France about this. So in the French and Indian War, it was the British versus the French and Indians. And of course, we are on the British side. There is no America yet. So George Washington, this is where he gets his chops, is by fighting in the French and Indian Wars. This is where a lot of our generals in the Revolution get their chops. So one of the guys who fought for the British, so is he American? Well, he's neither, is Lord Jeffrey Amherst. And this is why he is a lord, is because this is still, of course, British colonies. And he did quite well, I guess, in the French and Indian War. Obviously, we won the French and Indian War. The French tried to gather an alliance of natives together to fight the British because it was pretty clear that the British were beating the French in the colony game. Well, it didn't work. The British win, and of course, we go on to become a country. Now, Lord Jeffrey Amherst, I guess, settled in Massachusetts, or maybe, I don't know, maybe he just had a town named after him. But he did get so this town becomes Amherst, Massachusetts. But while Amherst is, I don't know if this is during the French and Indian War or just after it, he writes a letter. And in this letter, he gives a postscript. And it's a really historically unfortunate postscript. And Robbie, I believe you have it in front of you. So this is what Jeffrey Amherst writes in terms of what we should be doing with Native Americans.
You will do well to try to inoculate the Indians by means of blankets, as well as to try every other method that can serve to extirpate this execrable race.
I don't understand why is he from a Alabama plantation?
I really don't do a very good British accent.
That was like Foghorn Leghorn.
Well, I mean, you could take it or leave it.
Okay, I frankly want to leave it. I don't think anyone actually listened to the quote.
I'll read it again. The quote was in a letter that he wrote in 1763, and it's a P.S.
Which is, by the way, after the French and Indian War.
You will do well to try to inoculate the Indians by means of blankets, as well as to try every other method that can serve to extirpate this execrable race.
Right, so essentially what he's saying, thank you, Colonel. What he's saying is to give them smallpox blankets as a way of wiping them out. So the town of Amherst is named after him. Amherst College develops, and as you said, doesn't have a mascot, but it's sort of, especially in the 20th century, starts unofficially going by the Lord Jeffs, which is a funny, unusual name. But, you know, that specific quote by Jeffrey Amherst about wiping out natives by using smallpox blankets, which you would think is almost like the urban legend that there were smallpox blankets, but just hasn't really aged very well. And so the college, due to some fighting by the students, fair or not, has decided to change their mascot. We really just create an official mascot because, as you said, Robbie, Lord Jeffs was never an official.
It was never
one.
Official. And the college has kind of taken they've taken kind of some middle ground here. They've because apparently one of the school fight songs or songs that are sung at like sporting events actually mentions Lord Jeff in the song. And so the college said, we are going to distance ourselves because a mascot is intended to unify people, not divide. And Lord Jeff has become a divisive figure as our mascot. But he said, but the chairman of the board of the Amherst board said, beyond that, people will do as they will. The college has no business interfering with free expression, spoken or written, or for that matter, sung, period. So they're officially not going to be Lord Jeff's, but if fans and students are singing the Lord Jeff song or the song where he's mentioned at the game or chanting Lord Jeff, they're not going to put up, you know, cause problems about because of it.
But as of recently, there was a poll about changing the mascot, and then Amherst College released all the nominations, and the list was 145 pages long that provided both names as well as the rationale that people gave. And some of them were just incredibly lame. Just the Cardinals.
So I'll be honest. We sent this around for all of us to look at before the show. Yeah. I don't think I made it past A. But there's 145 pages, so I still went through a significant number of pages of list. Billy, how many of these names do you think you looked at?
I read a couple of the A's, and then I jumped down to the very last one, which was zombie cows.
I did, yeah, zombie cows. That's right, yeah.
Brent, of the 145 pages, what percentage do you think nominations did you actually look at?
Well, so there were actually two lists. One had the rationale and one didn't. The ones that didn't have the rationale was only like 20 pages long. The ones with the rationales was like 145. So I looked over at the ones I liked on the non-rationale list and then looked at the rationales. And I've got five that I really like that I float by you guys and see what you think.
Yeah.
And we don't have anyone from Amherst College on the air with us right now. Frankly,
because we've kind of hit our quota for higher ed administrators in the last year.
Plus, you know, New England preppy schools. We're good old Midwestern stock here. We don't care for your highfalutin ways in Amherst, Massachusetts. I don't really know where Amherst is.
And your foghorn, leghorn sounding namesakes of your institution.
So one that was nominated several times, which I really like, would be the Amherst Hamsters.
I saw that one.
So the Amherst, and why the Amherst Hamsters? Because hamster is an anagram for Amherst.
It's really fun.
Which I think is fantastic. I really like it. I mean, it's certainly inoffensive. You're worried about offending someone. You just got hamsters here. But a couple people actually offered Lord Jeffrey Hamster. So instead of Lord Jeffrey Amherst, it's Lord Jeffrey Hamster, which I think the artistic possibilities for Lord Jeffrey Hamster is incredible. And there's no way Lord Jeffrey Hamster would be in favor of smallpox blankets. Of course not. He's just this happy little rodent with probably, I imagine, a top hat on or one of those like Napoleon three-corner hats. So I think that's a great one. I'll let you guys vote at the end. The second one, this takes some context, but the Infinite Jesters. The Amherst Infinite Jesters.
I like that one.
So David Foster Wallace, one of the more important American writers of the last 30 years, unfortunately, like Boner from Growing Pains, took his own life. But in the mid-80s, about the same time Growing Pains was probably in its second or third season, he wrote his sort of magnum opus, which was Infinite Jest. And it's a very complicated book. It's like 1,000 pages, like 300 of those pages are footnotes and fun endnotes. It's got a lot of sort of postmodern play in it. And it's actually about amateur sports, tennis. And David Foster Wallace was a graduate of Amherst College. And so I think it's fantastic because Infinite Jesters is not only local, considering Wallace's alma mater, but more great artistic possibilities in the representation of the Infinite Jesters. And come on, Robbie, if there was an Infinite Jester t-shirt, you would buy that.
I'm just trying to imagine what it would look like. Well, what the logo's going to look like, what the mascot's going to look like.
You got the medieval jester with the bells coming off and, you know.
He has a little staff with the infinity sign on the top of it.
Yes, oh, nice. I do like that.
Yeah, I imagine purple is a color. I don't know what the Amherst colors are, like, but purple.
It is
would,
purple.
Like, it is purple? That's perfect for a jester.
Yeah, that is
purple
their
and yellow.
I do like the jester, but if the hamster has the Lord Jeffrey in front of it, the hamster is beating out the infinity jesters.
Fair enough. All right, the third one is... the Amherst microaggressions, which on a college campus I think is real. So what is a microaggression? It's sort of a loaded term because it's sort of like trigger warnings and things like that. You know, microaggressions would be seen as like, you know, someone part of some sort of hegemony who is oppressing people in these microaggressive ways, much like having their college named the Lord Jeffs. So it's obviously written by someone who's upset at the fact that they have to change it from Lord Jeffs and so is giving this passive aggressive microaggressions. But I just think
that's funny.
You just take it at face value and it's just this little tiny guy. He's just represented as someone really little and he's a microaggression and he's got like huge fists or something and he's just always ready to brawl. Much less offensive than the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So these next two stick with the literary quality of Amherst. So do you guys know who was known as the Belle of Amherst?
Was that Emily Dickinson?
It was Emily Dickinson. And so the Amherst Emilies, which I like because I can't think of another team named after a woman. And it wouldn't be like you could even say like the male Emily or the gentleman Emily's or something like that. You could mark the men's team instead of marking the female team.
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be fantastic.
I mean, I still think you need to mark either one, but...
That'd be something very progressive a Northeastern private elite liberal arts college might do.
Yeah. So and it sounds fun, too. The Amherst Emily's. I mean, like, that rolls off the tongue.
Like,
though,
is the logo, like, just her silhouette or a picture of her?
Like a big buff fighting version of her.
Yeah,
really
absolutely.
Big fists.
Like it's a silhouette, like those 19th century silhouettes with the oval frame.
Yeah.
But she's got her fists up like the Notre Dame Fighting Irish has his fists up.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
And then the last one, and you could do this as a collective noun or not, but it's the Amherst Frosts. Because Robert Frost is also from this area. And yeah, so that would be, you know, Robert Frost, who's one of 20th century's most important poets, but also seen as very pastoral. So it would be great to see him just angry. Just, you know, the mascot could be him picking up rocks off of a wall. That's a literary reference. You guys have been eschewing my literary references today. But he could be picking up rocks off the wall, ready to throw it at his opponents.
So would it be the Amherst Frost or the Amherst Frosts?
It could go both ways.
Either way.
Which do you prefer, Billy?
I like the Amherst Frost.
Now, see, I'm not generally a fan of collective
nouns. Sure. Brent, you don't like the Miami Heat, right?
Exactly. But if we understood the Amherst Frost as Robert Frost and not as a collective noun, like we are all Robert Frost, then I can get behind that. Because it does roll off the tongue better than Frosts.
Frosts.
So of those five... What do you say?
Billy, should we debate this before we give Brent our answer? And we'll just pretend like he can't hear us discussing it.
There's a poem that I really like by Robert Frost called Those Winter Sundays. And that's a lot of the imagery used in that poem is like cold and chilling. So I think you could go with Frost and still have it be seen as Robert Frost, but a cold Robert Frost. You know, like he is like a superhero almost, with like blue and icy stuff. He maybe shooting ice out of his palms.
Absolutely. Forcing the other team to take the road most traveled, which happens to send them right off a cliff.
I do think I like the Emilys the most, though. That's sort of what I'm partial to right now. Where are you at on this, Robbie?
You know,
hamsters is good.
If Lord Jeffrey Hamster is still on the table, yeah, just plain hamsters, I probably go with the.
That's hard.
It really is hard. I probably go with the microaggression.
Oh, that's my least favorite of those.
Well, it's because it's gonna be this little guy with his big fist. That's what I like about it. But because it sounds cute. But ferocious at the same time with those big fists. But
just like systemic injustice.
Except that Lord Jeffrey the hamster would be adorable. And
like big wet eyes.
Big wet eyes. And he'd have, you know,
wet,
he'd have
eyes.
A,
is he have yeah. worms?
He'd, no, like,
he'd have a monocle.
No, like
you know, the know, monocle, definitely.
Like a glaze. They're not glazed.
What
yeah,
is
I it?
Think he has worms.
You know, like the cartoon characters, they have the big eyes and they look like they're about to cry.
But wait, what if we did have it just as like a, you know, part of his character, the Lord Jeffrey Hamster had worms? So, I think he's anemic, iron depleted.
Microaggressions is, I get why it's funny, but it's my least favorite because it's the most unrealistic of that group.
Oh, I mean, you think they're actually going to go with some, like, literary reference? I mean, and they have, like, these three great literary figures in their school's history, but there's absolutely no chance they're going to choose one of those names.
Really?
They're going to go with something incredibly lame.
Yeah, it's going to be, like, it's going to be the Hawks.
Well, like, Riverhawks, right?
Susquehanna went with Riverhawks.
For Pete's sake.
When you had Hellbenders.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they didn't choose Hellbenders... So many better names than this bland, blasé. Yeah, I mean, what do you think they're actually going to choose? I mean, you've seen most of the list, Brent.
You know, there's a lot with suns and stars because their motto in Latin is something about shining light out. And so I think there's a chance they go with that.
Like the stars.
But I would always bet on just the lamest bird or feline.
Panthers.
Like, it's just going to be so, it's going to be like a cardinal or a hawk or an eagle or a panther or a wildcat or something like that. And I am just going to get I am going to approach Robbie talking about lions' level of rage when that happens. Because, like, you know, here's the thing. Okay, they're realistically not going to choose Hamster or Lord Jeffrey Hamster, as fantastic as that would be. But Infinite Jesters, or even just the Jesters, or the Emilys or the Frost are three like legitimately great, I think legitimately great mascots that have legitimately great meaning, and they will absolutely not consider it. And if they do consider it and I'm wrong, well,
what's going to happen?
I will buy merchandise for both of you.
Great.
From Amherst College.
Oh man, that's exciting.
So if they choose anything that is a mascot name off Emily Dickinson, David Foster Wallace, or Robert Frost?
As long as that's the primary reason. Like, if they call themselves the Stars and they mention some Robert Frost poem where the word Stars
that's
comes
not,
up.
No, no, yeah, agreed. Agreed.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, if it's the primary, I will buy you multiple pieces.
I don't want to take a cheap t-shirt from you.
No.
I want something that's earned.
No, I'll get you, like, maybe one of those, like, nice zip-ups.
Whoa.
Well, let's not get carried away.
That's how excited I would be.
We could call the Amherst Animal Control Office and ask them what animals are native to that area.
So it's the Amherst raccoons?
Amherst possums?
Because it's Massachusetts. It's not like it's a different ecosystem. So.
You know, the first place I've seen, I bumped into a moose in the wild, Massachusetts.
That's actually one of the common options is the Amherst moose.
Yeah.
But then do you call it? I mean, it's
Meeson.
They would just say moose.
Yeah, well, not a collective noun. That's actually the plural.
They'd probably do like the fighting moose or the moose fighters.
Moose are actually very dangerous.
They are.
My wife hit one with a car once.
And she lived to tell about it.
No.
Man, I...
happened this past week. We didn't get a chance to bring that up. Oh. Too busy on the Alan Thicke obituary to bring up... My wife's passing, so that's on me.
It's funny that you bring up your wife. I told my wife, I said, hey, I'm going to be going and recording the podcast this weekend. And you know what her response was? Oh, good. I've been waiting for one.
That's great. But you're kind of angry at that.
Well, because I looked at her and she's like, isn't that what you want me to say? And I'm like, if it's sincere, I do. I'm like, have you even caught up far enough to listen to the Pulitzer Prize winning writer George Dorman join us for an interview a few weeks ago? And she's like, no, what are you talking about? And she's like, the only time I listen is when you get on your phone and you turn it on in the kitchen while you're at work. And so it just spontaneously, you and Brent just start appearing in the kitchen.
And she doesn't even bother to turn it off.
Yeah, she's like, sure, I'll listen.
Doesn't take much, at least. I thought you were going to just be mad because she was excited to listen to a new one because she wanted to hear what I had to say.
She wanted some Brent jokes to laugh at.
Look, Robbie, I'm the wordsmith and you're the good looks. That's why you're going to present to the county clerk.
But Billy's the good looks, Brent.
That's true.
But he's a decade younger, so he doesn't have this 1980s pop culture knowledge.
Exactly. He's still developing his charm that you have. I mean, it's a process. He's sitting at your feet to learn that.
That's why you guys should go a little easier on me.
You're right, Billy.
Thanks.
You're gonna watch one of the Growing Pains episodes over Christmas break, right?
No, on Christmas.
On Christmas Day. While your family's opening presents.
Not anymore,
Mark
Robbie.
The Herald. Shut up. Mike's about to learn a very important lesson.
Do you remember the episode where Mike was a substitute teacher and Leo DiCaprio? That's like his first. Who would have thought somebody would have said, hey, you know that kid is in his class that he's teaching about vacuum right there?
That's right. I do because Mike says how all objects, all masses travel at the same speed. And Leonardo DiCaprio is like, no, it's not. That's not true. And they take out two things and they throw them out the school window. Yeah. And one like smashes down. Mike can't figure out. And so he's got to like look it up himself. And he realizes it has to be in a vacuum. And he teaches that to Leonardo DiCaprio's character. And, you know, some lesson is learned. And, you know, he ends up getting off drugs or whatever his problem was.
And that's actually what led Leonardo DiCaprio to be in Titanic.
Eventually.
I mean, who would have thought, though, in that moment, hey, the kid in that scene, he's going to be a super-duper movie star, and the other guy is just going to wash out and do really bad Christian films.
I would never imagine him to be a super-duper star.
But he is. Super-duper fantastic.
So what did you guys decide on the Amherst mascot?
Robbie wants microaggressions.
I don't
After Lord Jeffrey Hamster.
My vote is for the Emilys or the Infinite Jesters.
And I would say Emilys or Frost.
If I have to choose one of those, I'm going to go with Frost.
So we don't agree.
We don't agree.
But I'm going with Billy. Billy and I are going with the Frost.
But remember, it doesn't matter because any of those three, if David Foster Wallace, Emily Dickinson, or Robert Frost are in any way a part of the mascot.
You're getting us game-worn basketball jerseys from Amherst College, right?
I am paying for our road trip out to Amherst College where we call a game. Can I just say what my favorite irony in all of this is? So they're trying to change the name of the mascot, but the college is still called Amherst.
I know.
It's still the guy's name. And I'm sure the college is named after the town, but that's only one degree of separation. You're still, like, to say you're named after the town instead of the guy is, that's like saying Washington State saying like, oh, we're named after Washington, D.C. We're not really named after George Washington. Like, no. Like, you're clearly still named after him, but you won't change that because it's actually like an issue about the value of your degree, the value of your name and reputation. You won't change that, but you will change the mascot. It's incredibly ironic.
Why not change it to Greater Massachusetts University?
Exactly. Which is why maybe Infinite Jesters is great, because it just seems like an infinite jester would be like ruling over this entire ironic. You know, I don't care whether they change it, but it obviously is coming from this place of moral outrage. But where is the moral outrage towards the school's actual name? So an infinite jester seems to reign over that as the true king.
So we're going with Frost.
Okay.
Brent's sticking with infinite jesters.
Well, no,
I take Emily's
over Frost. And oh. Brent and I agree on Emily's.
Yeah, so actually if there's a common...
All right, you guys, sure.
Especially with that silhouette of fighting Emily Dickinson. Mm.
It's like the old maid silhouette, right? From the card game
Old Maid. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And I really love the idea of having to single out the men's teams instead of the women's teams.
But wait, let me just float this out here.
Float it.
What if at the start of every game, or I don't know if they have a football team, but like a basketball game, you roll out a little house, and then from out of the little house bursts Emily Dickinson. So, I mean, like, here's the thing.
I don't know a lot about Emily Dickinson's writing in her books, but I imagine she's did not have this reputation as being this figure with a lot of bravado that was going to explode out of a house.
No, not at all. Now, like, popular culture sees her as an agoraphobe, afraid to go outside, which is not the case. That's not true about Emily Dickinson. However, you might as well lean into the pop culture stuff so that she's bursting out of her room. She's bursting out of her room. She's just so hungry for competition. The Amherst Emilies.
I love it.
Let's send this podcast to Amherst College, and I'm sure they'll respond to us.
Absolutely they will.
In 2017.
Maybe they'll send us those free t-shirts. Without you having to buy them for us.
Oh, look, the Amherst Wildcats. Thanks. I'll burn it. We'll burn it on the air.
Thanks for listening to the show this week. It's been a great 2016.
That's what everybody's saying. It's been a great 2016.
But, you know, before it ends, why don't you make it just a little bit better? Subscribe to the Afternooner Sports Podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud. Or Stitcher or Google Play, or frankly, subscribe on all four. And you know what? If you don't like the way one of your family members voted in this election, maybe you want them to vote Democrat, maybe you want them to vote Republican. It doesn't matter to us here at the Afternooner Sports Podcast. But you're going to be at their house, and there's going to be random iPads and phones sitting around. Just pick up one of those phones. Subscribe into the Afternooner Sports Podcast. They will thank you for it later.
Or send us some gift cards. That'd make a nice Christmas for us, too.
Totally unrelated. Or make up some... I could use a casserole. Just a nice casserole.
What kind of casserole, Brent? What do you want in your casserole?
A lasagna casserole.
Mm. Tweet that lasagna casserole at The Afternooner on Twitter. And as I said before, you can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Tweet at us at The Afternooner. We're also on Facebook. Until next year.
So long, 2016.
Show me that smile.
Ooh, show me that smile.
Don't waste another.